We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Question. It's funny when people try to compare Notre Dame's success to the SEC. An entire conference, even though there is one school with more national championships than Notre Dame who is 3-5 against Notre Dame.
I think it's talking about Alabama there.
I would assume.
So, yeah. Look, history is defined by recency. When people are having these conversations, I mean, you say, well, you know, Notre Dame has a winning record over Alabama. I'm pretty sure it's talking about Alabama. Let me just go here and check real quick. But I don't think Bear Bryant ever beat Notre Dame. Now that I think about it, I think they had a win in 1986 was Alabama's first win over Notre Dame. And I don't think that Bear was the coach on that team. It was Ray Perkins was the coach on that team. So Bear was 0-for against Notre Dame. You know, they beat him in 73 in the Sugar Bowl. Notre Dame beat him in 75 in the Orange Bowl. They beat him in 76 in South Bend, beat him in 1980 in Birmingham. And then Alabama's won 3 of the last 4. But here's the deal. Nobody cares about Notre Dame beating Alabama in the 1970s. Just don't care. People care about what's happened in the last decade. In the last decade, Notre Dame against the best SEC schools has gone 0-for. 0-for-2 against Georgia, 0-for-2 against Alabama. Now, they've beaten everybody else. I mean, nobody else in the SEC has beaten them. They beat South Carolina. They beat LSU twice. They beat Vanderbilt. I mean, so they've won those games, but those aren't the games that you're defined by at Notre Dame. You're defined by how you did against Georgia and Alabama.
Right.
That's just the reality of it. You know, just like at Michigan, you're not defined by you beat Michigan State every year. You're defined by do you beat Ohio State or not. You know, and that's the thing is Notre Dame has played Alabama on the big stage twice in the last decade, and Alabama smacked them both times. And, you know, they were much more competitive against Georgia, but they lost. And so, I mean, that's what people are going to do until you start beating them. It's as simple as that. You're going to have to deal with this stuff until Notre Dame wins. And when Notre Dame starts wins, you know, that's basically where it comes from.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Here's one. Let me get back up here. I'll answer this one here from John A1. If Hartman wins the Heisman Trophy, would he be bigger than Brady Quinn at Notre Dame? That only happens, John, if he wins a championship. Look, Brady Quinn is a legend in Notre Dame for a lot of reasons. One, he's got an Irish name. He came from I think the name of his high school was I think they were the Irish. I think that's Dublin Kaufman is an Irish like type of school. I think that's true. He played for a long time. He was kind of part of the revival for a period of time at Notre Dame. He was a warrior. He just played his butt off. And he was a really big, tall, strapping, good-looking kid guy that represents everything that you think Notre Dame should be about, right? Graduated in 4 years with like – or in 3 years with like 2 degrees, you know, all academic, all-American type of guy, you know, winner, all that stuff. And so I don't think Sam Hartman would – the only way Sam Hartman, to me, has any chance to become bigger than Brady Quinn is if he wins a championship. I think – and even then, it's debatable.
Yeah.
You know, because it's what Brady did over the period of his entire career and is still doing. I mean, part of the reason Notre Dame is going to be able to compete on the NIL sphere with the kids who aren't looking for the immediate paydays is what Brady Quinn is doing. With the NIL, with the collective he's working on. Not, I don't even think it's a collective, with the fund that he's working on, right? His love for Notre Dame, he didn't just impact Notre Dame in the 4 years he was here. He's impacted it since he's left. But it would have...
Yeah. Go ahead, Ryan. Oh, no, I was just going to say, I think that that's a key point, though, that you're making, Brian, is the fact that, look, I think it's cliche to say sometimes, but Brady Quinn's a Notre Dame guy, man. I mean, from the start to the finish, right? I mean, he came here... played his entire career at Notre Dame, continues to love the program, to support the program. And I think that he has become almost mythical with how people think about him, right? I mean, Brady Quinn was incredible to watch. He was one of my favorite players, you know, kind of through the fandom. But then also the fact of what he continues to do for the program, I mean, that's just some longevity stuff, man. I don't think Trevor Lawrence could come here for 1 year and become more beloved than Brady Quinn. Like, I just don't think that's realistic. Like, I just don't, you know?
It would have to be Heisman, 39, 4,000 yards, and a national championship. It'd have to be like
a Cam Newton, Auburn type of thing, right? Like,
right. Yeah. Honestly, Ryan, it'd have to be something like that. Joe Burrow at LSU, I mean, he was only there 2 years, but he's a legend because he won a championship, right? I mean, if Burrow has the same stats that he had and they get knocked out by Oklahoma in the semifinal, They don't talk about Joe the way that they do now. Even just sure. 3 years later, it'd have to be a championship. And even then, I still don't know. Like, he would be that now, but in 5 years, it'd be like, hey, remember Brady Quinn? It would be that, in my opinion. I think it would be that. But that's a really good question. And you know what, John? I hope we get to find out because if Sam Hartman wins the Heisman Trophy, Notre Dame is really freaking good this year and is a playoff team.
Yes, with what you think the run game is going to be on top of if he has Heisman worthy numbers passing wise, like yep.
Irish in Ohio. This is a really good question. He says, Brian and Ryan, neither of you were originally high on Hartman. Was there someone else in the portal you guys originally wanted, or someone you wanted that did not enter the portal? Have a good weekend, guys. I know for me, Ryan, the guy that I really wanted early on that I hoped would jump in the portal is Tyler Van Dyke. That was my guy kind of from the beginning because I was like, that kid's got a lot of tools to be a really good college quarterback in this system. But he obviously never jumped in the portal. That was the guy that I kind of looked at early on as like, oh, I'd love to have that guy because he can throw the deep ball. I think the system fits him. I think the players that are on the roster fit him. I think getting him out of that insane, cancerous offensive culture, which who knows what that's going to be next year, because they just fired Josh Gattis, which is
for
wild.
1 year.
I had a buddy tell me that he's reading reports from that he hasn't been like doing any recruiting the last few weeks. Like, this apparently was expected. Like, I have a feeling, what's going to come out is they needed to fire him by a certain date to, you know, it's going to be some kind of, like when UConn waited to fire Bob Diaco till a certain date, because then they wouldn't have to pay him as much money. I wouldn't shock me if it's something like that.
That's with Josh Gattis. That's wild. But I mean, the name that I really liked early on that never entered the portal was Michael Pratt from Tulane. I've really liked Michael Pratt a ton. I was good with Hudson Carr too. Like, I would have been okay with Hudson Carr.
I was good with it, but I think that Hartman's, as I studied the film, Hartman's the better pick there. And by the way, Notre Dame would have got same Hudson Carr if they wanted him.
Right.
Just so people understand. He went to Purdue, for Pete's sake.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
They absolutely, and he pursued Notre Dame. Hudson Carr, we'll say this now, Hudson Carr pursued Notre Dame. But Notre Dame just kind of had they liked his talent, but they just need, like, to me, Hudson Card's a not as good version of Tyler Buchner. Not very experienced, hasn't played a lot of ball, kind of a playmaker. A more experienced, not as talented version of Tyler Buchner, to me, is he's got ability, but he hasn't played a ton of football. Are we really sure he's the guy that's going to come in and be that guy? And the answer at the end of the day was no. And I was asked this question once by somebody. He said, you know, where would you put Card on your list? And I said, I really don't have him on my list. I like him a lot, but of the names that I just was given, he'd be at the bottom of my list because of those guys. I know who they are. I know what they're going to be. And if you're going to go with a guy that you don't know what he's going to be, go with Tyler Buchner. You know what I mean? And then go get a good backup quarterback, you know, somewhere like Ohio State did, that kind of guy. But, you know, go get Keaton Slovis or something as a backup in case Tyler gets hurt or something like that. But if you're going to go for a portal quarterback to come in and be the guy, you've got to get somebody that is a proven player. And Sam Hartman was without question the best on the board for that, you know. And even if you didn't take some of the other things that we had heard about Devin Leary, the reality is Devin Leary's injury history is just too much. It's just too much. You couldn't go with that, Ryan. I mean, just what are you getting? You know, it's not like he broke his ankle or tore his knee up last year. It's a shoulder. It's a upper body thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you couldn't take that chance. You just couldn't take that chance.
I will say to the question, my hesitancy with Sam Hartman early on, and I admitted this kind of on the board, I think, or maybe I said on the show, I was evaluating him too much from an NFL perspective. I was. I looked at him and I said, he's not incredibly gifted. You know, he's 6'1", 210, middling size. He doesn't have the strongest arm of all time. He's an okay athlete, not great. But, I mean, the point blank to it is, and the interceptions are something that he needs to kind of get a hold of a little bit, right, in that system. But what turned me around is that then I looked at it from a different perspective. Kid's thrown 77 touchdowns in 2 years, right? He's a leading touchdown passer in ACC history. Sam Hartman might never be an NFL quarterback to the highest degree, but he's a really good college quarterback. Like, there's no doubt. And for immediate return for next year, we'll talk about a proven commodity. I have a really good idea of what I am going to expect out of Sam Hartman. You know, I think there's a really, really high baseline with a player like that because he's done everything that you need him to do, man. Like, if a Notre Dame quarterback gives me what Sam Hartman's been over the last few years, they're going to be a really good team. If he takes a step, then you're going to be a tough team to beat. Like, that's the point blank period to it, right? So I think that it was just a different vantage point I looked at from Sam Hartman that changed my opinion on him a little bit. I misevaluated what was important in his skill set early.
My miss, Ryan, too, was obviously is I've watched him play a lot, but it's like kind of watching him play as I'm just watching the game, right? And you see the misses. You see the, like, dude, how did he miss that? Like, you see all the sacks he takes. And then, you know, you see that stupid mesh, and I absolutely hate that. And then you break the film down, and you're like, okay, that receiver ran that route wrong, or he's not able to set his feet and make that throw because the mesh is taking him into the line and he's got to try to throw while like jumping in the air sometimes to get over the line. And you start to see a lot of those things. You say, hey, look, when he's able to do the things that will be asked of him in the Notre Dame system, he's pretty good. and he can run this system really well. You watch how well he throws the deep ball. You watch how well he look, he's going to look, the receivers are going to have a mentality of, you can't take plays off like we saw from them last year, because you don't know when Sam's going to throw you the ball or where, or, hey, I'm covered, so I'm going to stop running. No, you're covered. He's going to throw that ball up and give you a chance. And if the receivers don't fight for balls, he's going to throw picks. I think that hurt him at times too, Ryan, is a good number of the picks he had, to me, were mesh scheme related picks, as opposed to him just making a lot of dumb decisions. He'll make some, he'll force some balls now. Don't get it twisted. He'll force some balls. You're like, dude, you know, come on, man. What are you throwing that ball for?
I know. But, I hate the mesh. I hate the mesh.
Yeah.
Mesh is stupid.
Yep.
I saw someone said it worked for Wake. Wake Forest isn't very good at running the football. Does it really work for Wake?
It doesn't.
Does it really?
No. It works for them because they have good receivers, but they don't have a lot of speed at receiver.
Yeah.
And what that has allowed them to do is kind of get into their routes and get free.
Yeah.
That's going to be the big difference for Sam Hartman is, with all due respect to A.T. Perry and Sage Surratt, those guys don't run like the Notre Dame kids run, in my opinion. And, you know, we'll see if I'm right on that or not, but I think that's going to be a thing that he's going to really like, is their speed. There's some speed to work with out of the backfield and a receiver, to me. So let's get to some more here. We got this one from I'll answer this one quickly, from John A1. Brandon, Ryan, if you have an opinion, you can share it. Would Brandon Wimbush's career at Notre Dame been any different if Tommy Reese was his quarterback coach his entire career? I don't think so. It'd have been different. He'd have been better, but not worlds better, because I don't know if Tommy really knows how to coach that type of quarterback yet, but I definitely think he'd have been better. Brandon Wimbush was a much better quarterback in high school than he was in Notre Dame, because he didn't get ruined by Mike Sanford yet. So, but the other thing too is for Brandon to have been coached by Tommy Reese, Tommy would have been 2 years out of his playing career.
Sure.
Now, this version of Tommy Reese, sure. But at the time, Tommy would have been like 24, the first year's coaching Brandon, 25, you know, like he wasn't ready to be that guy yet. I don't think he was ready to be that guy in 2017. Right. But he's not the same guy now that he was in 2017. He was 25, 26 in 2017. I think he was better, but I still don't know if that's the type of quarterback that he is best suited for, in my opinion. But Tyler Buchner will be that chance to kind of prove it, because there's some similarities there between Tyler and Brandon, in my opinion, as players. All right. Here we got one from Zach Martin here, Ryan, about the bowl game.
Yep. He said, Zach said, rewatch the South Carolina game. Does Hillman, Brandon Hillman, or other have the skill set to add a wrinkle similar to DeCarrion Joyner, Wildcat with an actual threat in the passing game?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, Brandon Hillman can throw the football now. I mean, Brandon Hillman's not Jalen Elliott as a quarterback. I mean, Jalen could throw, but Jalen was an athletic kid that was asked to throw the football.
I forgot Elliott was a high school quarterback.
Yeah, he didn't play DB till his senior year.
Yeah.
The thing about Brandon Hillman is he's not a Power 5 quarterback. Brandon Hillman could be an FCS quarterback. Like if I'm James Madden, well, not they're not there anymore, but if I'm like Richmond or,
James Madison even now could probably still use him as a quarterback.
Sure. To be honest. Old Dominion could maybe use him now as a quarterback, but definitely like when those schools were FCS schools, you know, William and Mary, Richmond, teams like that. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. He could play at that level, which means he could do that. Yeah, I think so. I absolutely think so. Would I use him there? I don't know. It's kind of gimmicky, you know. You're playing a team that you don't think you can beat.
Talent too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you, well, like with that kid, they didn't have him playing quarterback though, right? They just kind of put him in as a wrinkle, the Joyner kid. Yes.
Well, and I honestly, I don't love how they use Joyner, because every time they give Joyner the football, man, he makes a play, but it's just like he's in such a niche role that just doesn't touch the football enough, you know? Like it's, Brandon Hillman, I think, makes a bigger impact as a full-time safety than he does as a niche gadget player. That's just where I am with it.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to these some more. We got one from Seth Clark here, Ryan.
Seth says, who are your early recruiting crushes in 2024 recruiting cycle on defense?
I got a new one
for me. Yeah.
Yeah. I got a new one, and it's the Leonard Moore kid. I broke his film down yesterday, put an update, just not an update, but like a just sort of an evaluation of him on the message board. I like that kid a lot.
Yeah.
I'd take that kid now. If he wanted to commit this weekend, Ryan, I'd take it. I'd take his commitment right now, partly because of how well Mike Mickens has recruited in the past. You know, you can kind of take a little bit of a flyer on a kid, you know. But I watched, I mean, he can run. He's super long. His transitions, when his technique is right, are really good. He's got a lot of technical things he's got to clean up. Like a lot of technical things he's got to clean up. But man, that kid can, that kid's got some tools now.
Yes.
Is he where Benjamin Morrison was? No. But he's got some tools, man. And then also, Ryan, you and I have talked a lot about this. If I'm going to err on the side of taking the kid, I'm taking the kid from Texas, right? I mean, I just think that's a state Notre Dame needs to get into. Plays against very good competition. He's one of mine. He's one of my early crushes. Another one's a kid that Notre Dame's not going to get. They are visiting him today. And if you're on the message board, if you read the article we put out, they are visiting him today. Jayshon Ross is a kid I absolutely love. Notre Dame's not right now has no shot to get him, but I absolutely love that kid as a player. Love that kid as a player. He's another one that I like quite a bit in this class, Ryan.
Yeah. Leonard Moore is a really good one. Guys, if you want to see, you want to ask length, right? What's length look like? Go watch Leonard Moore's film before snap happens, man. His arms are like down by his ankles, man. It's wild. Man, he's crazy. So long.
Crazy.
DeMelo Jones is one for me.
Oh, yeah.
Of the state of Georgia.
Deke Cooper's nephew.
And he is a 6'1", 175-pound safety that can also play wide receiver, can play Wildcat quarterback. He is being recruited by Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, and most of them have offered him as an athlete to play either on the offensive or defensive side of the football. Some like him at corner. Alabama likes him at safety. I mean, Notre Dame, excuse me, likes him at safety. He's a really good athlete all around, can change direction well, and he comes up with violence, man. Yeah. He's got some strike to him. I love that kid. DeMelo Jones is a really talented football player out of Georgia.
I like that kid quite a bit. I keep seeing people saying he's 155 pounds. Nobody that I know of lists him at 155 pounds.
Yeah, where's that from?
I don't know where that's coming from. I've seen that was said on the message board as well. Somebody said 155 pounds. He's going to have to fill out. Number one, you look at him, he's not 155 pounds. I'm checking his huddle now because maybe that's on there, but that would have been when he put it on there, like when he first created his huddle account. Yeah, it's on his huddle account, 6'1", 155 pounds. I promise you that's what he was when he made his huddle account, which is probably like 2 years ago. So, because I was like, where are people getting this from? I just looked at that. He's not 155 pounds. He's at least 175 pounds right now to me when I look at him. When I look at pictures of him and when I watch him on the field. But it doesn't change the point of what is said is he definitely still needs to get stronger and get in the weight room, but he's a very willing tackler as well. Honestly, Ryan, part of the reason I like him is I think he can play field corner. I think he's got the range. He's got range like Cam Hart. He's got some of the coverage instincts that Benjamin Morrison has, although we don't, you know, because remember, Benjamin Morrison was a great press man cover guy at Notre Dame, but he didn't do a lot of that for Bro Free Prep. He rarely came up and played press man. You could just see he understood routes. He could flip his hips. He could run. He could close. He's not as good as Benjamin Morrison, but I see boundary skills. And honestly, I like him too, because if I wanted to be a pure cover one team, I'm putting that kid in center field and feeling pretty good about my ability to play number to number, you know, and definitely cover the hashes. So I like the kid a lot, Ryan, and I think he brings some versatility to it. So I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah, man, he's really good. There's a lot of kids I really like though so far. I mean, the Jackson Jones kid, the pass rusher that just decommitted from Oregon that Notre Dame's, you know, on
love
a little
his
bit.
Film. Like he's, love. Yeah. I just wish he was a couple inches taller and a couple inches wide longer. I do.
Man,
but his film is fun to watch.
Bendy, man. He's bendy and explosive. I can get down with that kid.
He's a pretty good player. I'll tell you what, Ryan, a kid that I really like, and I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but I love that David Palapele kid. That's my best guess on how to pronounce his name. I love that kid.
David Palapele.
I'm just kidding.
I don't know, actually.
I love that kid's film. Again, three-star kid, but that's the perfect kind of nose. 6'2", 305. You give me him or TJ Lindsey at nose in this class, and I'm feeling really good about the nose tackle pickup in this class. No question about it.
We were joking in our group text yesterday, I remember, about like, imagine him and Justin Scott inside. It's just like, wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, we were talking about that last night. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Here's one from John A1. Which opponent would be the sweetest payback bowl victory for Notre Dame? Bama, LSU, Oklahoma? OU. I'm gonna assume he's talking about Ohio State on one of those or Michigan. I mean, the only school that Notre Dame has to pay back in those two ones is Ohio State and Bama. And for me, bowl victory would be Bama because you're going to get a chance to beat Ohio State in the regular season. Yes.
Yeah, that's number one for me, man, is Bama. I mean, 2012 still stings me, man. It does. I'm not going to lie about it. Like, it sucks. Yeah. 2020 wasn't nearly as bad. 2012.
Because I thought the 2012 team could compete with them. I did. I did. I thought they could compete with Bama. I thought the 2020 team needed to play their best game of the year to have a chance to beat Alabama.
Yeah.
But, yeah. And just what that would mean for this program to beat Alabama in a bowl game would be huge. A major bowl game would be huge. I mean, what payback does Notre Dame need to give LSU? They took the coach I didn't want here anymore. And Notre Dame has beat them the last two times they've played. What payback does Notre Dame have for LSU? They stole the punter? Jay Bramlett? Like, I don't know what Notre Dame has to do to pay back LSU. So LSU's done me nothing but favors the last year and a half. So thanks the last year and a couple months. So I got no payback for them. Let's see here. Let me get down to a few more here real quick. Oh, here's a good one, Ryan. Ryan, how do you feel about the Utah tight end going before Michael Mayer in a mock draft? That would be the one from Daniel Jeremiah. And you told me about this. You're going to see that more and more and more from some of these mock draft people.
Michael Mayer's brand doesn't sell. I mean, and I'm not saying DJ's a clickbait guy. Like, I'm not. That's not what I'm saying here. What I'm saying is that Michael Mayer's brand – I had somebody literally on Twitter yesterday say this to me, Brian. It was like, oh, you don't take unathletic tight ends in the first round. I'm like, first and foremost, Michael Mayer's a pretty dang good athlete, man. First and foremost. Yeah. Second, that's why people draft Mike Gesicki over Dallas Goedert, right? That's why that happens, because you look for the flash. And I honestly, I'm going to put it like this, man. I had someone say something of, you know, Dalton Kincaid is better in and out of breaks than Michael Mayer. I'm like, yeah, one's 240, one's 265. If he wasn't better in and out of breaks, that's a major issue, sir, for first and foremost. Why are we comparing apples to oranges? They're not the same player. It's not going to look
the same. And I still think that's debatable.
I think it is too, because I think that people misunderstand Michael Mayer getting in out of breaks because they look at him and they're like, you know, there's some tightness at times. It's like, but yeah, he's 265 pounds. It's not always going to be super smooth. But then you'll see him break off a route and you're like, oh, he can get out of breaks. Yes. He can. Yes. He can. So I think it's ridiculous. I do. I think it's ridiculous. I think the only thing that Dalton Kincaid may have in Michael Mayer is that he might be slightly, and I don't even think it's that crazy of a margin. He might be slightly better straight line fast than Michael Mayer. Michael Mayer, though, is a better blocker. He's better. I mean, Dalton Kincaid doesn't block for one. He doesn't even, like, they don't use him that way. Michael Mayer has a bigger frame. Obviously, we talked about that. He's better in the air. He's a better blocker. He's more physical. I mean, I just don't understand what we're doing, man. I just don't understand what we're doing. I could at least, Brian, I put it like this. I think the Darnell Washington stuff is also dumb, but at least I can look at Darnell Washington and say, he is a better blocker than Michael Mayer. That's cool. At least there's something he's better at than Michael Mayer, right? The Dalton Kincaid thing, there's nothing that I think he's better at than Michael Mayer. Like, there's nothing.
And his ball skills aren't even in the same stratosphere as Michael Mayer.
No.
He was a system-generated kid. Right. And that's the thing, is like Michael Mayer did what he did with different court. I mean, you put Michael Mayer on that Utah team with the town around him against that schedule, and, you know, he's doing some pretty darn good things, in my opinion. Yeah. So, yeah, it's comical. It really is. But it's not to be unexpected. I mean, Ryan, you know this. You mentioned it the other day. There's the whole paralysis by analysis thing. Right.
Yes.
And you know, I look at it, who would you say are probably the two best defenses that Dalton Kincaid played this year? Would you say that they're most talented, athletic, whatever? Would you agree with me that it's Florida and Oregon State?
Yeah.
Oregon's in there. USC's in there.
I might put Oregon over Florida.
Okay.
But, okay. Yeah.
So here's what he did in those three games. I'll give those three games. Against Florida, he had two catches for 29 yards. against Oregon State, he had 3 catches for 17 yards. He had 11 catches against Oregon for 99 yards.
Yeah.
9 yards a catch.
Yes.
4 for 35 for 8.7 against Stanford. Right? He had 16 catches for – this is where he made his money. People are obsessed with the game he had against USC. 16 catches for 234 yards. That's what they're obsessed with. And that's and he's new, right? That's the thing is he's new. He kind of broke out this year.
Yeah.
And so there's the hype of that. Whereas Michael Mayer's been they've been evaluating Michael Mayer for 3 years. And now they're picking apart every little part of his game.
And I hate the conversation, and I hate the conversation back and forth on Twitter because I don't dislike Dalton Kincaid. I don't. Right. He's a top 5 tight end in this class. Sure. No Which, doubt.
And this class is pretty good because it's a pretty good tight end class.
It is a good class. But the fact of the matter is I don't think anybody's even close to Michael Mayer. Like, bias aside, because, I mean, you could look at – I'll tell you this right now. Isaiah Foskey's not going to be crazy high on my edge rankings right now. He's not. Right. I mean, that's just personally, right?
There's not actually a lot of – Mel Kiper thinks a lot more of Isaiah Foskey right now than you do. You think he's more of a round 3 guy. Mel Kiper had him in his first round of his draft.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a second to third round player right now, Isaiah Foskey, on the field. Talent level, he's a first rounder. Sure. But I mean, again, we're at some point that has to actualize itself, in my opinion, right? But I mean, I just don't see what you can look at and say that guy's like not even Dalton Kincaid. I'm taking it to Darnell Washington. I've seen people put Luke Musgrave in this conversation from Oregon State. I'm just like, look, man, Luke Musgrave's a nice little athlete. He's got some developmental potential. He's not Michael Mayer, man. Like, he's not. He's just not. You saw it, right, man? It was like one of the first games Michael Mayer saw it, like, played at Notre Dame. You're just like, yep, that guy's different, man. He's just different. It's just easy to see that guy's different. And I don't know. Whatever.
I think the other thing, too, for me, Ryan, I think the only guy, in my opinion, that belongs in the conversation with Mayer is Darnell Washington simply because he's such a freak athletically. If the light goes on for him, he could be really, really good, right? Yeah. That's the only guy to me that if you're going to talk to me about him, I wouldn't agree with you, but I'd at least, okay.
And at least he has a baseline where you can say he's going to be a dominant blocker at the next level. Even if he never becomes a high-volume pass catcher, you're like, okay, but he could still be Bubba Franks or Mercedes Lewis, right? Which is still a good football player. It's still good. It's just you might have to supplement in the passing game a little bit if that's all he is as a pass catcher, right? If he's a 40-catch-a-game – if he's a 40-catch-a-game, 40-catch guy on a season, you might need to get a second tight end. So that kind of ups that production a little bit. That's just where we are.
Let's get on to some more here, Ryan. Super chat from Adam Shipley.
Of the current roster, including incoming freshmen, who has the highest ceiling and who has the highest floor on the defensive line and linebacker position groups?
Well, we talked about this yesterday. D-line's easy for me, Ryan. Highest floor, Devin Houston. Highest ceiling, Boubacar Traore. I think you have one. I think your ceiling is different than mine, correct?
Yeah, I mean, my conversations between Armel Mukum and Boubacar Traore, like, I think that they're pretty close. I think that you honestly can flip-flop those guys. I agree 100%, though, that I think Devin Houston has the highest floor.
Charles Jagasaw is both for me on offense. I think he has the highest floor and the highest ceiling.
Yeah. Yes.
Sam Pendleton probably be number 2 for me on floor.
He's got a high floor. Yeah. Charles Jagasaw, man, he looked so good as a senior. And it's crazy to think that he was playing with a knee injury after the second game of the season.
Yeah.
I mean, that kid's going to be special, man. He's going to be special.
Let's keep him healthy. JJ Goodway with Super Chat. JJ, thank you very, very much. I'll ask you this one, Ryan. How would you break up the quarterbacks in the spring game? Which players are paired together?
I mean, we talked about this, right? Like, I didn't have like a substantial opinion on this, but I think the more that we kind of talk through it, you on one side, you have Tyler to begin the game. On the other side, you have Sam Hartman. That's where it is. And then, I mean, how would I pair the rest of it? I mean, it doesn't really matter. Either way, I want the second half to be a large influx of Steve Angeli, Kenny Minchie. I want to see those guys. So I don't really care. I don't care if Minchie's on Sam Hartman's team or if he's on Tyler Buckner's team. Regardless, I just want them to be spread out and to get as many reps as possible, obviously.
All right, let's get to some more questions here. We'll kind of work through some of these as quickly as we can. Coach Koch, here's Coach. One. I'll ask this, Ryan, because this is one you'll have a better feeling on for me than me. He says, what do you think of the new of the Princeton preferred walk-on? That'd be Cole Aubrey, correct? Or Audrey? Is it Aubrey or Aubrey?
Aubrey.
Aubrey. He is obviously determined to play for Notre Dame. Any chance he cracks the rotation?
Coach Koch, it's a good question.
We're talking defense or special teams? Because the answer is different.
Yes. So he's a kid that's interesting in the sense that he's had some production. But, I mean, the point blank period to it, and as I had a chance to talk to him last night, and I'll have kind of a piece on him pretty soon. But he's a kid that understands his role, I think. You know, he talked to me about whether it is as a rotational player or a scout team player or a special teams player, he's going to work his butt off and he's going to do whatever it needs to do to be an asset to the team. So, I mean, for me, just kind of looking at him briefly, I don't think he's going to crack a defensive rotation. I think that he's going to be a key special teamer, which is going to be great. And I think he is a kid, though, that from a depth perspective can at least give you a look from as an inside linebacker and could play some Viper for you, especially on like scout team opportunities and do all that type of stuff. So I think he's going to be a versatile player that can play multiple spots, but his real role on this team in 2023, in my opinion, is as a special teamer.
Agree. Here's a question that we can answer somewhat quickly. This is from David Lois. Says, what were our classes during ranked during the Weiss era? So just real quick, really, Rivals is the only outlet that still exists from then. Scout's gone. I don't even know if ESPN has archived theirs back that long. 247 didn't start till I think, 2010 or 11. So it's really Rivals. And their Charlie's first full class was the 2006 class, which finished eighth. The 2007 class, that was the Jimmy Clausen class. That class finished eighth. They signed, was it like two or three five-stars? One five-star, so that'd be Jimmy. I thought Golden Tate, ESPN had Golden Tate ranked like 14th and had Gary Neal ranked or Gary Gray ranked in the top 25 as well. The 2008 class finished second. The 2009 class was one that actually, here's what's funny. The lowest ranked class that they had was the 09 class, which finished 21st. That class produced, you want to hear who was in that class? Okay. Tyler Eifert, Zach Martin, Manti Te'o, Chris Watt, Sear Wood, Theo Riddick, Zeke Mata. So, yeah, that was the low-ranked class, by the way.
I haven't heard Zeke Mata's name in a while, man.
Yeah, Zeke Mata was a good college football player. And then his last class, I mean, you really can't count. But, I mean, look, that class finished 14th. But in a lot of the guys they got, I mean, he got TJ Jones. He got Bennett Jackson. Charlie's staff did. They got Tommy Rees and Andrew. Tommy Rees was committed to them. I think Andrew Hendricks was as well. Kendall Moore, Prince Shembo, Lewis Nix committed when they didn't have a coach. So
that's wild.
Yeah,
that's
wild. Yeah, Tony Alford recruited them when they didn't have a coach. He committed between Charlie being fired and Kelly being hired. So wow. Yeah. Yep. JM Jonesy 80. Here's one.
Yep. The question is, Brian, one thing you didn't discuss on your linebacker golden show was the cross training. Besides the scheme being complicated, I think having the linebackers learn two or three spots hurt their development also.
I think there's merit to that. I think, but it's not what I would say is I don't think cross training by itself hinders development. I think it's how you teach cross training, how you teach it, right? Is there so much crossing that they never figure out anything, or they're practicing 80% of the time at this position and then 20% of the time they're working this other thing? So I didn't go to any of the practices. I couldn't tell you how they worked on cross training. So I can't a good conscience answer that question. I think hindsight 2020, we can look back at all the issues and say, I think that might have been a problem, and there's merit to that. But I can't say for sure because I see teams that cross train all the time and it works well. And so it would have to be, are you allowing them to master one at first and foremost? That would be kind of the thing for me, is I would want to see how they did it. So,
yeah.
Hey, reminder, hit that like button, subscribe, people, share it. Of course, Logan Thayer, this would be one for you, Ryan. Here's a good one. I don't know if this is true or not, so I'm going to ask you. When Brian Daboll started with the Giants, he scripted plays designated to get Daniel Jones to fail and Tyrod Taylor succeed to see how Jones responded. Sometimes coaches need to give that extra push. I've never heard that, Ryan. Did you ever hear that?
I've never heard that either. It's an interesting kind of what we call a psychological test, I guess, right? I mean, you're trying to see how a guy responds to adversity, which I think is very interesting. I mean, I definitely have seen coaches that have – they have tried to put players through like the worst possible situations to see how they get out on the other side. But I haven't heard this specifically about Brian Daboll, but I think there's merit to it, right? I mean, to be a quarterback, especially, you need to be resilient, man. Like you need to be able to fight through the fire and all those cliches that you hear. So if true, I think it's a very interesting idea to do because I think that you need to know that, especially because talking about Daniel Jones specifically, Daniel Jones is about to come up on a contract opportunity, right? So if you're, especially if you're going to invest in a guy, I need to be sure that he's the guy, right? Like I can't have any questions at that point.
I've said this all along for quarterbacks, especially in practice, but in practice, you have to have periods of practice that you set up for tougher. You're kind of setting them up to fail. You got to see how a quarterback's going to handle when his number one and number two and number three options aren't there, or when you're calling plays that are being run against a defense that's not suited for what you do. One of the mistakes that they made during the Brian Kelly era, I don't know if they did that this year or not. Again, wasn't a practices, but they did a lot, way too much setting the script up for them to have success. And that there's a time and place for that. But if you don't set them up for, gee, we're not prepared for, like Harry Heastand, I was told used to do this all the time in practice. He would just throw these stupid looks at his offensive linemen, just all these crazy looks during different periods and just bring all these different stunts and blitzes during periods because he's like, well, if you guys can pick all this up and know the rules, because there's certain rules that apply that kind of can prepare to pick up anything, you know, but I'm going to throw some stuff at you. Maybe on Monday you get your butt kicked a little bit too. But by Thursday, you've got this stuff picked up. And guess what? There's nothing they can throw at us on Saturday that's going to catch us off guard. But if all week you've been working on this one play against cover two and it works great against cover two, but then you call the play and they go cover four or cover three and your quarterback doesn't know what to do because he's only ever seen the look against cover two, then you did not prepare him to be successful.
Yeah,
and so that's why you've got to put him in those positions from time to time. If he throws a pick on Tuesday, then it's all good. But by Thursday, he knows where to go, and that's the key.
We used to do something similar when I coached too, Brian. Like we would do the same stuff, just like throw out these stupid blitzes against offensive line, and you're like, that's not even in the playbook, man. Like that's not even a thing, right? Like that doesn't make sense. But baptism by fire, man. Ultimately. Yeah.
Here's a question from Brandon Plensner says, are you concerned with the fact that Bryce Young has a Hall of Fame D-line for a dad, but doesn't have the technique or use his hands that one would hope he'd have? You think technique would be his main asset? I'll say this. I'm not worried about it. Two reasons. Remember, that was one of my criticisms of Benjamin Morrison as a junior. His technique wasn't really great. You know, and you remember his dad played in the NFL as a defensive back. The thing for Bryce Young is I don't think he's played football that long. Number one, I don't think he grew up playing football. I could be wrong on that, but I thought I remember seeing that. Number two is he's still learning how to just function. Like as a he's had a couple big growth spurts. It's a long, gangly kid who I don't think is quite coordinated to the level that he needs to be. I also don't think his hand play is as bad as some people make it out to be. But he's still just a junior in high school, you know. And not every dad who's a Hall of Famer is out there every single day putting his kids through drills. Some dads just want to be dad. Archie Manning is that way. You know, it's like, yeah, I'm sure he worked with the kids and all that, but it's like, I'm dad, right? I'm not your coach. I'm your dad. And, you know, there's some of that too. And the other thing too is I don't think Bryce Young really adopted football as something he's passionate about until recently, you know? And that's the other thing too, is especially if you're a dad who's had my kid has to, because he's going to always be compared to me. My kid has to choose this path.
Sure.
And I'm to the point where I'm even going to take a hands-off approach because I need to know that when he does make that decision, that it was his decision. He wants to do this because he wants to blaze his own trail, you know? And so it can be tricky, honestly, Brandon. I think it's a very fair question. I think it's a very good question. It's just not something that necessarily concerns me a whole lot, to be honest with you. You know, it helped Joe Alt, right? But the fact that it's not the case here, it just doesn't concern me a whole lot.
Especially for his age. I think that's the key thing, right? I mean, he's grown into his body. Like you said, he's still a kid that does look a little awkward movement. Like he's a good mover, but like you can see he's still growing into his frame. He's still growing into his body. I I think for me, especially, we're talking about a junior in high school. At the core, Brian, like, I'm looking for kids that have unteachables, right? Like, I'm looking for guys that have the athleticism, the length, those things that you can't cheat. You know, you can't change that. You can't really coach that up. I can coach up hand play. I can coach up a better stance. I can coach up a better get off. Like, those things are things that I can work on. There's nothing unteachable that Bryce Young lacks, right? He's a long kid. He's pretty explosive. He's got a nice profile to develop. It's just about the teachables that you can give to him. So I'm not as worried just because of his age. If I was an NFL coach and he was like 26, I'd be like, sure. I don't know if he's ever going to quite get this. But at 16 or 17 years old.
If he doesn't have a bit of a jump as a senior, then I'm, you know, now that he's embracing football more, Brandon, then I'd be a little bit more concerned, to be honest with you. Let's see here real quick. I want to get to some more. Indy Irish 25 asks, LSU win a natty in the next 3 years? And do they win because of BK or in spite of it? Number one, I don't think that they are going to win a title. I don't. But if they do, it would be because of Brian Kelly. I mean, you can't look, I dislike the guy, but if he didn't walk into a situation with a loaded roster, he had to go get a bunch of transfers and all that kind of stuff. If they go win a title, it's because he put a staff in place to go win a title, right? It's not like he's walking into the 2019 roster and you're like, dude, like, okay, Larry Coker, like, of course you won a championship, right? You'd have to give him credit for that, in my opinion. And now again, is he going to do everything possible to get them there? No, there's always going to be some, but you know, that's one of the benefits of being LSU. I was told this by all the LSU people. It's much easier to recruit at LSU. Oh, okay. Well, then he has no excuses then, right? I mean, so he should be able to go win then because he has no excuses. But honestly, if he wins, he'll have a role in it. Certainly, he'll deserve credit for that. I just don't think he's going to win one. That's my thing. Here's another interswing from Brandon. Out of all the new offers these past 3 weeks, who are five guys that intrigue you the most or the guys you'd want Notre Dame to get? I'm going Darian Mayo, TJ Moore, Benedict Ume, Melo Jones, and Daniel Freitag. Well, two guys for sure on that list are guys that I would want for sure. I like Mayo a lot, but TJ Moore and DeMelo Jones are two for sure that I would love to have.
I do like your list, Brandon, because Benedict Ume is a kid that I'm very interested in. I don't know if I would push for him if I was Notre Dame, just because it's a big defensive line board right now, man. There's a lot of talent on that board. So I don't know if I would prioritize him, obviously. But I think he's very talented, and I would continue to recruit him because he's another kid that could take a big rise because he's raw, but he is very talented. DeMelo Jones is one for sure. Like, DeMelo Jones would be a take for me yesterday. Like, yes, make that one happen. Leonard Moore is someone that
Ryan knows. He's one of my three. He's one of my three, no doubt about it. Honestly, Ryan, my only concern with Daniel Freitag is I like him, but my concern would be, is he really going to be dead set on playing football? That would be one of my kind of my hangups on him a little bit, honestly. Would be that. Offensive line wise, I mean, I like a couple of the offers have been thrown out. I kind of like the Styles Prescott kid. I mean, he's not like, oh my gosh, you got to go get that kid. If they push for him and get him, great. If they don't, I'm all good. That's a good offer. I think that's a good offer.
Sure.
And then the fifth one for me, Ryan, is I really like the Darren Dupree kid, the running back from Illinois.
I like Dupree too.
I like him quite a bit. That would be my other one.
He's a good one. Darren Dupree is a good one.
Davis Andrews is another one. That I he's not my, you know,
he's interesting.
I might have to put him over Styles Prescott because he could be a rover, could maybe be a safety. I'm not quite sure where, but he's that kid's athletic, rangy, and a good football player. Really good football player.
Agree. I know Brandon mentioned Darian Mayo. He's a really toolsy kid. Toolsy.
I guess he's not on my list because I just don't get my hopes up about the DC kids anymore. You know what I mean? So. He's got some tools, man.
I'll give you one, Brian. Was the Platt kid, the Braden Platt out of Washington.
Is that the running back linebacker kid?
Yes.
Yo, that kid can ball. Yeah.
Brian, he is a 214-foot javelin thrower too, man. What now, the heck?
Ume, Ryan, I haven't seen enough of to have an opinion on that one.
Yeah.
So
he's got some Stephon Tuitt in him. Yeah. Not saying he'll be that, but he stylistically, I can see a little bit of Tuitt. The Platt kid, though, out of Washington, man. He is a ridiculous athlete. I mean, he's listed at there's a lot of different heights and weights on him, but he's got a verified 4.6 something in the 40, so he can run a little bit as a linebacker. but he's a 214-foot javelin thrower, 150-something-foot discus thrower, and a 61-foot shot putter as a linebacker. Yeah. That is wild stuff.
Well, there's no doubt. There's no doubt. Here's one. Here's a couple, Ryan, before you got to get out of here. Here's one from Joel Gallegos. Says, I know Sammy Brown was a targeted linebacker for Notre Dame, given I think he is a long shot to come out of Georgia. Has the staff moved on, or does Sammy keep things pretty tight-lipped?
So I have a decent relationship with Sammy Brown. I'll say this. Sammy Brown is definitely interested in Notre Dame in the sense that he's very intrigued. And, I mean, he's been on a visit. He's planning another visit. The staff has been by to see him as well. And so, no, Joe, I'll say this. It's not like an all egg in one basket for Sammy Brown, right? Because I think that you understand that that's going to be a tough pull out of Georgia, man. Like, that would be a ridiculous pull. I don't think that Notre Dame will ultimately land Sammy Brown. But if you're Notre Dame staff, you don't stop recruiting Sammy Brown. The kid's a stud, man.
Because if you
stud.
Reach your numbers, Ryan, you still take him. If you're only wanting three linebackers and you land three linebackers and Sammy Brown wants to come to Notre Dame, you say, okay, we're taking four linebackers this class.
Kid's a so stud, that's just the reality, man. There's always room for Sammy Brown. Yep. Always room for Sammy Brown.
Kid's Here's an interesting, Ryan. Let's go with this. And this is entire running back rooms. Give me your top three. Rank the following running backs room from worst to first. Alabama, Michigan, Ohio State, Notre Dame, Florida State, Penn State. Give me your top three.
As an entire group, right? Entire group?
Entire room. So not just one, two, entire group. Here's mine. Yeah. I don't know if I'd say for sure in order, but it's Notre Dame, Penn State, and Michigan. And the reason I'm going with those three over Ohio State is Ohio State's one, two, and then major question marks, right? Alabama has a good running back room. You're counting on freshmen and freshmen that are good players, but I don't think are necessarily better than Jeremiah Love, where Jeremiah Love's going to have a hard time seeing the field. And then, you know, Florida State's got a really good running back room, but they lost one of their running backs.
Really good one
out.
Too.
Yeah.
Really
he transferred out. Yeah. And so that's why to me, Penn State's room went from probably second for me to third because they lost the number three running back.
Kayvon Lee.
Transferred out. So their 1-2 is as good as anybody's, I think, next year. But I'd probably go Michigan 1. And again, my issue with Michigan is their number three is – look, Notre Dame has the best 1-4. But the reason I give Michigan – the edge there is because they have the one guy that's way more proven. You know, Blake Corum is really good.
Really good.
And none of the Notre Dame guys have necessarily shown to that level yet. But – if you know, so their 1-2 is really good. I don't think the rest of theirs is as good as Notre Dame's, but that's one fair. Is a pretty big advantage for now. I could see it changing during the season, but for right now, that's where I'm at.
We would have the same three. I would probably give Notre Dame the slight edge just because, again, it's to four, right? To five, right. To six. Like, you have so much depth.
It's nuts.
You really do. I mean, but yeah, Michigan's 1-2 duo of Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards, like, that's dumb, man. That's a really talented duo. But then Penn State, I mean, if we're talking about 2023, though, I mean, I expect Nick Singleton and the – what's the other kid's name? The little scat back type. Yeah, Catron Allen, right? Isn't he a 200-pound kid?
I thought he was bigger than that, but I could be having him confused with the kid that left.
Yeah, Kayvon Lee was a big kid. He was like 230 or something.
Yeah, Allen's like 200 pounds. Yeah. I always get him and Lee as far as body type.
So Allen and Singleton change of pace in 2023 could be stupid good. It could be really
He's from North. The other kid's from Norfolk, Virginia. So I always tell you, that's where the ballers are from. So
Rick Doyle, second string.
Thanks. Oh, well played. Well played. Very well. Just came to you. That was good. I'm impressed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Here's one for you for it's kind of NFL draft related, Ryan. Bowers or Mayer? So Brock Bowers or Michael Mayer, who has the better NFL career? Bowers is amazing, obviously, but I see Mayer dominating for years. I just say this, Ryan, tell me if you agree.
Yeah.
It's hard to say that because number one, I don't know what systems they're both going to be drafted into.
Exactly.
You know, and then what kind of tight end are you looking for? If you're looking for a George Kittle, then yeah, you're probably going to look for, you know, Brock Bowers. If you're looking for more of a traditional tight end, you're going to want Michael Mayer to me. So that's my thoughts. What are yours?
I mean, at some point, right, this conversation has to come to, do you value the full package or you just value one thing, right? That's where it comes down to. Can Brock Bowers be a more impactful pass game weapon than Michael Mayer? Yeah, it's very possible. It's very possible. The kid is an incredible athlete. There's no doubt. But he's not ever going to be a blocker. He's just not, right? Even if he gets up to 240, 245, he's just not going to be that guy. Like, he's a mismatch weapon. Like, you move him around and you take advantage of the mismatches you create. Michael Mayer can do a lot of that differently, not the same as far as how he wins. But then also he's a block. He can block his tail off when he, you know, and he's developing in that regard. So I think that Michael Mayer is the better all around player. I do. I think Brock Bowers could be a more impactful receiver. This is a comparison between, you know, again, do you want Kyle Pitts or do you want the all-around tight end that's a dominant player, right? So right. I think that Mayer is going to be a very successful player. I compare him to Jason Witten. Like, I think that he reminds me of that dude. Like,
somebody in the chat said he's a Dallas Cowboy guy, and used that Witten comparison before, and I think it makes a lot of sense. Ryan, can I get you three more?
Yes,
real quick before you get out of here. Here's a good one from John A1. Better OT combo. Blake Fisher, Joe Alt, Ronnie Stanley, Mike McGlinchey, Eichenberg, Robert Hainsey.
I do think it's going to be Fisher Alt's projecting just slightly. I'll say this. Out of all those players right there, I think Joe Alt leaves college as the best player of anybody on that board. I do.
He's got a chance.
I think he's going to end that way. Now, the second part is, you know, what's the separation, right? How much better do I think Joe Alt's going to be than a Ronnie Stanley, for instance, right? Or a better than a Liam Eichenberg. But I think that the pairing, again, if Blake Fisher even comes halfway to it, where he is now to his ceiling, then, I mean, I think it's a no-brainer at that point, right? I mean, based upon what I've seen, I would go here Stanley McGlinchey from everything I know right now. But from where I think it will be, I think it's going to be Fisher Alt. I do.
I think right now it's Stanley McGlinchey. The 15 tackle tandem of McGlinchey and Stanley was without question the best we've seen. Without question. The one you left off was the 13 duo of Zach Martin and Ronnie Stanley was pretty darn good. That team only gave up 8 sacks that year with Ronnie Stanley at right tackle and Zach Martin left tackle. I think people forget that Ronnie Stanley was the right tackle that year. Yeah. Eichenberg and Hainsey were just really steady. Stanley and McGlinchey were dominant in 15. That's the best so far. I agree with you that Alt and Fisher will be, especially if they both come back in 2024.
Oh,
you're talking about maybe one of the best tackle tandems in Notre Dame history, if not college football. I mean, that's a very high praise and a little bit absurd, but look what they just did as sophomores.
Right.
Imagine if they're seniors together. But I think by the end of 2023, Ryan, I could see that. But if that's true, if we're even having that conversation, it's phenomenal because that offensive line in 15 was so good.
Yep.
So unbelievably good. That's what's funny is that one did. That one would have been the Joe Moore Award winner to me because the Joe Moore Award wasn't a thing then, was it? When did the Joe Moore Award start? I'm not sure about that, but if I'd have to go look, see what the history of the Joe Moore Award winners are, because if they didn't win it then goodness gracious, that award is just trash. Let me find it. It started in 15. They gave it to Alabama. Lost all respect for the Joe Moore Award because there was not a better line than Notre Dame's. There was not a better line than Notre Dame's in 2015. So yeah, that's going to be pretty nasty. The second one that I wanted to ask you, Ryan, yep. And this is kind of for me, to be honest with you, TJ Stalika said, Brian, who would you rather as head coach for your Denver Broncos, D'Amico Ryans or Sean Payton? I'm going to give my answer. I'm curious to get yours. 1,000% D'Amico Ryans. And I don't even know a lot about D'Amico Ryans. I've heard good things about him, but I think Sean Payton is an overrated coach. He's a good coach, but he's not worth giving up multiple draft picks to get, especially a first rounder. You already mortgaged your future for freaking Russell Wilson. So you're going to give me an overrated coach and an overrated quarterback, and I had to give up multiple first round draft picks to get there. Hard pass. So I'd rather take a chance on D'Amico in that instance.
That's the separator. That's exactly what I was going to say, is if everything was created equal and I get both for the same price, like, yeah, I'd probably go Sean Payton. But the fact that Sean Payton comes with so much capital that you have to give up to get him,
yeah,
D'Amico Ryans, even if he's an unknown commodity.
Is he bringing in his prime Drew Brees with him? You know, because that's the reason they hired Nathaniel Haycock. Well, look how good he did with the Packers. He had freaking Aaron Rodgers. You know what I mean? Like, of course he did well there. Here's the last one, Ryan. This is a kind of a draft question. Logan Thayer asks, if Caleb Williams or Drake May was in this class, would the Bears trade away Justin Fields to take them number one?
I think it's a better chance than it is this year. I think so. Yeah, because, I mean, if you're staring Caleb Williams in the face and you say, hey, man, we like Justin, but it's probably our guy, right? Like, Caleb Williams is significantly more talented as far as playing the quarterback position, right? So I think it's more likely that would happen this year, Logan, than it would if it was, you know, the former in that regard. Yeah. So I think next year would be a lot more likely. I do.
Yeah. I mean, Drake May, maybe not. You know, we still need to see a lot more from Drake May, but yep. I mean, Caleb Williams doesn't have the holes that the other quarterbacks in this year's class have. Holes meaning like with, you know, we know about CJ Stroud, Bryce Young's, there's nothing he can do about it. I mean, Bryce Young is a complete quarterback outside of his body.
5'11", 185, or whatever he is. Right.
Right. But his game is, you know, flawless to a degree. I really think that it is. Caleb Williams doesn't have that, right? He's got truly elite skills. So yeah, I think that there's going to be a lot of teams tanking next year. There's going to be a battle the battle for the bottom of the NFL draft or for the NFL next year, I think could be even as competitive as the top, just because you're going to see teams trying to tank for Caleb Williams. I really think so. So that's the only one I definitely had for you, Ryan, that I wanted to definitely get for you, but because I know you got to run, but you're obviously more than welcome to hang around for a little bit and finish the rest of these. But I know you got to go pick up your daughter. So it is what it is. Let's get down here to some more of these questions here. Stone Adore says, could Notre Dame's ranking next year be higher in the season, having played one or two more games than other teams? Alternatively, could the late buys later in the season hurt their ranking? Well, I think Stone Adore depends. It depends. If they go into November needing wins to climb up the rankings, let's say they've lost, you know, let's say they're ranked fifth going into Columbus and they get blasted and drop to 11. They're going to have a hard time in November with having 2 weeks off and like late October, November, and into November. They're going to have a hard time climbing up where they needed to get to. But that would have been the case anyway. I just think at the end of the day, I just think the buys are better for the team's health as far as like being healthy, really healthy down the stretch, being healthy enough to get a win over Clemson, being healthy enough to then finish strong. And then going into the postseason is a really fresh team. So I like those. I don't think that they're going to have that. They're not going to be that much further ahead than everyone else. Just a game. A lot of teams are going to have like late October, November buys. They're just going to not have the earlier bye. So it'll just be one game ahead. But if anything, I think it could help them, you know, in a lot of different ways. It just depends on when they lose. And the problem for Notre Dame this year is none of their losses that we expect them to lose, like unless they lose to NC State and then beat everybody else. But none of their projected losses, Ohio State, USC, or Clemson, are as the three most likely losses. If they're going to have a loss, is going to be one where you say, boy, it was so early, it doesn't matter. So I just feel like if they beat Ohio State, but then go beat USC and Clemson, I think they'll be okay as long as they don't get blasted. And I think if anything, I don't think Notre Dame's going to be ranked super high early, you know, probably like top 15-ish. So you can say getting to play every week and getting a chance to go out there and just win and get better as a team is going to help with their ranking. And then maybe when the first committee rankings come out and, you know, let's say Notre Dame is sixth and they've got two byes during that period of time, these teams are knocking each other off and Notre Dame's just sitting there coasting, you know? So yeah, they're not moving up because of the wins, but they're not moving down because they're getting beat. So I think that's another part that factors into it as well. For me, when I look at it, so that's kind of my thoughts on it. I got to get a couple more here before I get out of here. Let's see here. Logan Thayer says, if you could fill one entire position group with 5 stars every year, but never land any 5 stars at other positions, which would you rank? Treat the D line and edge as separate because they'd be too easy. Well, I mean, like D-line and edge. So let's say in that instance, we're going to go the 4 down then. That's my answer. I mean, I think you kind of jumped kind of where my answer would be if there was one position that, and when I say 5 stars, not 5-star recruits, but 5-star players. That'd be my other premise. The other thing let's accept is when we're not talking about what recruits they were, we're talking about what they are in college. I really feel like if you've got an elite 5-star, just destroy people right up the middle defensive tackles, you know, like, look at Georgia last year. Give me a Jordan Davis and a Jalen Carter at 3 technique and nose. Jordan Davis would be my nose. Jalen Carter would be my 3 technique. And I mean, if I'm just good everywhere else, I'm going to dominate you. Give me a bunch of top 100 to 150 caliber 4 stars with those two dudes up the middle, and I'm going to be really good on defense. Really good on defense. That'd be mine. I mean, look, corner would not be corner because if you have great corners, but you can't rush the passer, doesn't matter as much. It wouldn't be linebacker because they're all everything is dependent on the D line. And to me, if I could say, give me a 5-star edges or 5-star interior guys, I'm taking the 5-star interior guys. Again, we're talking about those guys being 5 stars as college players. That's where it would be for me. I think that's. You know, and I'll be honest with you, there's not a position on offense that I would care about having nothing but 5 stars other than quarterback. Again, we're talking about what they are as players in college, not recruits. There's really only 2 positions to me that I care about, and that's quarterback and D tackle. That's it. If I have 5 stars there and I'm just good everywhere else, I'm going to have a really, really, really good football team. Really good football team. So that's my take. That'd be my take on that one. Good question. Good, very good questions. Very, very good questions. Let's get to some more here. We got one from Omar Austin. All the 2022 and 23 linebackers are moving to line because of the numbers or depth problem going forward. So I don't know of any of the 2023 linebackers that are moving to the line. So I missed that if that's the case. I think it's not so much a numbers or depth problem. So you're saying will it cause a numbers or depth problem? No, I don't think so, because I think Notre Dame is kind of moving away a little bit. Hold on a second. Let me see. Did this break now? Hold on a second. Give me a second, everybody. All right. So it has been announced. So, hold on a second. Yeah, so I see people tweeting about it, so I don't know if it broke. I was asked not to say anything about this, but yeah, James Laurinaitis is going back to Ohio State. So that is going to be there. Yeah. Yeah. That's the reality. So I'm not sure what Notre Dame's going to do now. It just kind of happened within the last 24 hours. We shall see. But, it's out there and we expect that to be the case, but, there's no official announcement yet, but we expect that to be the case. All right. So next we have here, Michael Keeley says, do you think Notre Dame fans gain the respect of Ohio State fans similarly to what you've mentioned happened with George in the past, went to their place and played them tough for a game? Here's the thing for me, Michael, I there's 110,000 people in that stadium. I'm sure some of them gained respect for Notre Dame. Most of the Ohio State fans I know just think Notre Dame didn't, Ohio State didn't play very well. Oh, this guy didn't play. He was hurt. This guy was hurt. Most Ohio State fans I know just don't, you can't have rational football conversations with. There's Notre Dame fans like that, and there's other people like that, but just the ones that I know. So I can only speak anecdotally. There's an Ohio State fan here says he's always respected Notre Dame. So, but that was there before. I couldn't tell you. I really don't know. I haven't gotten that vibe, though. I haven't gotten that. Like Georgia fans, I got that vibe immediately right after the game. There's Georgia fans cheering for Notre Dame as they ran off the field at the end of that game. They just respected how hard they competed. And the fans respected it. I don't know that Ohio State fans are that way. So, yeah. So, maybe just 1 second. All right. So anyway, all right, let's get to these next questions as we wrap up here. Get to here. That was a good question though, from Logan Thayer. I really like that one. The one about five stars. That's an interesting one. Christopher Leone asked, do you think the Pac-12 will break through and make the playoffs this next season? It looks like a lot of those programs have good talent and return good quarterbacks. Thank you. And have a great weekend. Well, I think that there's some that have a chance. I absolutely think there's some that have a chance. Look, to me, USC has a chance. Like if USC runs the table this year, they're a playoff team. I mean, they're going to have a win over a good Notre Dame team. You know, they'll have to beat Washington and Oregon. They'll have to beat Oregon on the road. They'll have to beat UCLA plus the Pac-12 championship. I mean, that's just the reality of it. So, you know, look, if they go on the road and beat Notre Dame on the road, that's going to give them a lot of love. They get Utah at home. So we talked earlier about, like, you know, here's what USC would have to do in the last six games to be a playoff team. They'd have to beat Notre Dame on the road, Utah, Cal on the road. That should be an easy one. Washington at home, at Oregon, and then UCLA at home. And then they'd have to win the Pac-12 championship. So yeah, they run the table. And let's just say USC loses early to Arizona State in a weird game. And then they run the table on that. They're going to have a really good shot of getting to the playoff. Another team that I would look at as having that similar opportunity is Washington. You know, look, I think Washington probably has to go 13-0 or 12-1 with a somewhat of an early loss. But Washington will have a chance. They'd have to have kind of like a TCU scenario if they have a loss where they got in. Like, let's be real. TCU got in because some teams got beat right down the stretch. The committee would have loved to have put a one-loss USC that won out at down a stretch in there and Ohio State and teams like that, but they didn't. And so Ohio State backed in. And, you know, if Clemson runs the table down the stretch, if Clemson and USC both run the table down the stretch, I think there's a legitimate case that they would have made. I wouldn't have bought it, but they would have made the bump TCU out and put one of those two teams into the playoff. I absolutely think they would have done that. I wouldn't have agreed with it, but I think they would have done that. So Washington would need something like that or run the table. And I think they've got a schedule that's capable of it, but it's going to be tough. But it's the same thing. They got to play at Michigan State, and then they got Boise at home. So it gives them two relatively reputable wins, play at Arizona. Then they have a bye. Coming out of that bye, they have Oregon at home on October 14th, Arizona State at home, at Stanford, at USC on November 4th, home against Utah, at Oregon State on the 18th, and then home against Washington State on the 25th, and then the Pac-12 championship. So I think USC is going to be ranked. I think Utah is going to be ranked. I think Oregon State's going to be ranked. And I think Washington State's going to be a quality team. I love that their quarterback's coming back. I thought their coach did a solid job. They play good defense for Washington State. So I could see Washington State being a team that's also a tough win too. So part of it is how your schedule sets up. And I think both of those teams' schedule set up well that allow them to kind of go out and, you know, win some games and have some success and build up a reputation of, wow, did you see who they beat in late October or November or whatever the case may be, and go from there. And so I think that is two teams that I look at. I don't know if any of those other teams are capable of it. I think Oregon has a similar situation where Oregon could be a team that schedule-wise could get there. You know, they play at Texas Tech, they play at Washington, they play at Utah, they play USC at home, and then they play Oregon State. So they'll have a schedule that absolutely can give them a chance to get there at 12-1 and 11 or 13-0. But I just don't think they're as good of a team as those other two, to be completely honest with you. And that's kind of where I'm looking at it for that one. So I just, It's going to be interesting. Somebody mentioned this in the chat. Drew Pine is going to play against all those teams. So unless they get Jaden Rashad and decide to start him this year, you're probably going to have Drew Pine as your starter at Arizona State. And then what do they do? You know, like, what are they going to do in regard to, like, do you, I mean, you're going to be sitting there watching Arizona State, watching Notre Dame, being like, let's go, Drew. Let's get it done, right? You know, it's going to be fun to watch. Going to be fun to watch. And I hope that he's able to kind of have an impact. Could you imagine, like, late in the year, Notre Dame's fifth, and an Oregon or a USC or a Washington is fourth, and Arizona State knocks him off, knocks that team off with Drew Pine? That'd be pretty cool. I think that'd be really cool. So yeah, that'd be a lot of fun. Be a lot of fun. So let's get to some more here as we wrap this up. So many great questions today. Robert Bishop says, does anyone think Spencer Sanders or Rattler can work their way into the first round? Look, I think if Spencer Rattler has a big year, he could, just because he throws a beautiful ball and somebody's going to overrate him. I don't think either one of them are first round draft picks. Let's see here. Abent Nindy, how overrated is Arch Manning and how much unfair pressure will he be under? I don't think he's incredibly overrated. I mean, he's not a top 10 player. He's a top 35, probably 25, 30 player for me. He's a really good quarterback. He's a five-star, borderline five-star. He's not a top five guy. The pressure, I mean, it's enormous. I mean, he's a Manning. He's going to have all of that weight on his shoulders. But you know what? The first two handled it pretty well. And the thing, if you look at Arch, and he's just kind of like this mild-mannered. He's a lot like Eli, to be honest with you, where he just – the stuff just – he just doesn't care. Like, he put some update about his first week at Texas out, and he put it on LinkedIn. Like, what? Like, he doesn't tweet. He's not on social media. He just goes out there and plays ball. I don't think he's a truly, truly elite player, and so he's going to need some talent around him, but he's going to be smart. He's a pretty decent athlete, and he's a pretty darn good quarterback. You know, I'd probably say 35 to 50 is probably where I'd say I'd probably have him in my ranking. I haven't finished my final rankings yet, so I can't say for sure. You know, but again, he's a borderline five-star kid for me because he has a lot of the intangibles that you want in a quarterback, and I think that's important. We have Jim Bob Billy Pants asks, do you think Hartman has the it factor? Honestly, you know, to me, I can't tell you. Because I'll say this, he did at Wake Forest, but it's a different animal than Notre Dame. And so it doesn't always translate. You can have the it factor in FCS school and then go to the Division I and you just don't have it there because it's the pressure's greater, the spotlight is greater. All the aspects of it are just far greater. And you have to be able to kind of handle things that you don't really know how you're going to handle it until you actually are put in that situation. So you could say, hey, I did this at Wake Forest and I was totally fine. Wake Forest has like a 30-something seat stadium, right? I mean, sorry, it's this different animal. They're not playing in games that are going to have the magnitude of what he's going to be playing at almost every week at Notre Dame. And so the reality is you can't know how he's going to handle that. Based on what he did at Wake Forest, I like to think that he's going to be in position to do that. But like, look, he plays at home. He played at home last year against Clemson. There were 32,903 people in the stands that day. That's it. You know, when he goes to Clemson this year, Clemson's packing 70,000-80,000 people in their states and their seats. When he's playing Notre Dame, they're going to have 81,000 people in the seats, over twice as many people, completely different environment. And it's just a different pressure package. It's, you know, if you beat Clemson when you're Wake Forest, you're like, wow, generational upset. What a great win, blah, blah, blah. You do it at Notre Dame, it's like, well, yeah, that's what you're supposed to do. You're the quarterback of Notre Dame. Fair or not, that's just the reality. That's just the reality. And I don't know if he's going to be able to handle that. I don't know. We're going to find out if he's capable of having that. Last one here, and then I'm going to wrap up here. Oh, here we go. Logan Thayer, last two. He says, would you rate Manning or Carr higher if they were in the same year? I would rate Carr higher. I think CJ Carr has better physical tools. He's more accurate. He's got a better arm. He's similar athletes. Arch has got a little bit better body, but I think CJ has a little cleaner release. So I think CJ is the better player. I do. I think CJ Carr is a really excellent player. I had him as a 4.5-star grade kid as a sophomore. I don't give that kind of grade out very often. He jumped up to a 5-star as a junior. And part of it was because of some of the struggles he had. He had a really bad game early in the year. We had like several turnovers, and it's like, okay, let's see what this kid's made of. And he bounced back the next week and just ripped his opponent apart. I was like, okay, that kid showed me something. He had a really bad week, and he stepped up and really, really did well. And he taught me something that week. So I thought that was impressive. That was really impressive. So I liked what I saw from him in that regard. So that is actually going to do it, folks, because I have to get rolling. And we've got the IB Nation Sports Talk show starting right now. They are getting ready to go live with their Friday rapid fire. So go check that out right now. Before you do, though, however, please hit that like button, folks. Please hit that subscribe button. Hit the notification bell. Share this podcast. Leave us a 5-star review. And as always, make sure you check out the boards at or sign up for the message board at boards.irishbreakdown.com. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll see you guys again here very soon on the Irish Breakdown Podcast.